Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and I have invited back to the program author and our most favorite Renaissance woman, C.S. Marks. She is here to tell us about her new book, which is the second in her Tales of Altera, The World It That Is trilogy, titled Fireheart. The series began with Elf Hunter, and if you have not listened to our first interview with Chris, I highly recommend that you go back to our archives and listen to it. We go into Elf Hunter in depth, so check that out. So a little bit about Chris. Chris Marks is the daughter of academic parents. She holds a PhD in biology and has spent the past two decades teaching biology and equine science. She is currently a professor at St. Mary of the Woods College in West Central Indiana, and began writing shortly after her untimely death of her father, who was a professor of American Lit at Butler University. A gifted artist, Chris has produced illustrations and cover art for all three books in her trilogy, and she is also a musician. She plays and sings Celtic music, and a few examples of her songwriting actually are found within the pages of Fireheart. Chris enjoys archery and makes her own handcrafted longbows, yet horses are her passion. She is an accomplished horsewoman and currently owns 5 horses, and she has competed in the sport of endurance racing for many years. Chris has been happily married for nearly 3 decades, and she and her husband, Jeff, share their home with 10 dogs, predominantly Welsh corgis. So I am just so happy to have her back on the program. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live, Chris.
Well, thanks so much. I'm happy to be back.
Well, good. So Fireheart, it's on shelves now. Book 2, I know fans are just going to be jumping up and down with delight to see this book out.
Well, I think some of them are jumping up and down with delight. Others are probably picking up the book and going, wow, this is a big book. I hope I have, you know, time to read it.
It is a big book. It's quite long. Why did you make it so long? Why did it end up with that much in it?
This is a polite way of asking, why did I write a novel that rises to the level of furniture? Fireheart is, in fact, a very large and lengthy volume, but that is because it would not break well. The story would not break well in the middle, anywhere near the middle. This is the story about the long journey. This is the one, and the long journeys are pretty standard in many fantasy epics, and we've got one here. The characters end up traveling probably 2,000 miles in the course of Fireheart. So it is a lengthy book for a long journey.
Mm-hmm. Well, it must be very rewarding for you to see it out at this point.
Well, it's neat because the fans who have read both books have told me, some of them say, you know, Fireheart is even better than Elf Hunter. And I like to say to myself, well, that's because the characters are already developed, many of them, and there are lots and lots of intriguing new ones in Fireheart. But when they go into Fireheart, it's like a reunion with old friends. They already know the major characters from Elf Hunter, and, oh, thank heavens, there's another book. Now I can go back and be with my friends and continue on my adventure. Because that's what a good story does. It really takes the reader with the author on the journey, and that was my primary objective.
That's a really good point. So Elf Hunter was more about character building and getting the reader familiar with them. And so you're going deeper then into the characters and their own personal journeys in Fireheart? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, certainly any time we have characters interacting in any book written by me, there will be insights given further into their inner character. I mean, you'll get to know them more and more. The longer you read, the better you come to know them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way life is. The longer you know a person, hopefully the better you come to know him or her.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of intriguing new characters in Fireheart that are just barely introduced and developed. Some of them are among the more interesting ones, some of the readers tell me. And then that's, again, this is a long journey with many cultures and many opportunities for new characters. Aragorn's brother Haligon, for example, was introduced in this installment, and he's come to be some of the readers' very favorite. So it's neat to get people's reactions, because, you know, we all look at fiction from a different perspective, and different characters appeal to different readers. I mean, I won't tell you who my favorite is, because you probably think I'm strange, but
I know who your favorite is.
You do, don't you? We'll just leave it at that.
Okay, before we get any further, for listeners that have not heard our previous interview and maybe don't know what Alterra is or where it is, tell us a little bit about the setting of Alterra.
Alterra is based mostly in North America. And if you think about places in North America, this is a very Earth-like world. And if, for example, you look at Lord of the Rings and Tolkien's Middle Earth, is very similar to parts of Europe. Alterra is more like North American environment. Now, there are creatures in Alterra that thankfully aren't found in North America, but because it is a fantasy, but as you intimated to the readers, I am a biologist, and so many of my characters and creatures could exist in an Earth-like world. They're very realistic, and that comes, again, from being a biologist and having spent a great deal of time out in North America and various parts of it. I've been almost everywhere around here. Gee, I feel like a motel ad right now. doing this in primitive conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a great feel for the environments, being by yourself in the middle of nowhere in a desert situation, in a mountain situation, in a great prairie or a grassland or a meadow or a eastern forest or a northern boreal forest. I've been everywhere, man. And there are parts of Alterra that are like the northern boreal forest, parts that are like the beech maple eastern deciduous forest, which is where I live, parts that are like the Great Plains in the United States, parts that are like parts of New Mexico, Utah, Arizona. Now, when you get down into like the plains of dire thirst and the Great Salt, there you have to kind of go outside of our continent. So I had to rely kind of on the Discovery Channel for that one.
Okay. The plains of dire thirst. I love that.
Mercy. Well, there's a rather funny scene, actually, in which one of the newer characters who produces a map of the region, and she begins to draw features that are not included on the map, and there are all these little death's head symbols that she's drawing everywhere, and people are looking over her shoulder and thinking, oh my. Well, let's see, the fire sands, the plains of thirst, the mountains of dread, where the heck are we going?
Yeah, right. That is so funny. Well, I know that one of your mottos, not necessarily that this is something you put out there, but I know that you like to write about what you know, and you incorporate a lot of who you are into your books. And you just mentioned, as a biologist, you've been camping, you've been all around, all over North America. So how does that writing style affect a fantasy novel where you actually have the ability to make up anything you want, create just anything out of the ordinary that has, we couldn't even really relate to? How does it affect your writing when you make it relatable to your experience?
I think there are people who appreciate different kinds of fantasy.
Mm.
I think actually I can appreciate a very, very imaginative book myself, one that is set in a place that doesn't even have the same laws of physics and chemistry that we do. I can appreciate that, but I can't identify with it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't place myself there. Maybe that's the limit of my imagination and it's my limitation, but because I am more of a pragmatic sort, I like to imagine myself actually being in the scene, and I like to place the reader in the scene, and that's far easier for me to do when I'm writing about things that make sense. And actually, if we just talk about some of the more fanciful creatures that inhabit Alterra, these are creatures that could have evolved in that world, and I can explain to you how they came to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes them real to me and also to the readers. They feel almost every review mentions, I felt I was just right there.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that I met these characters and I went with them to all these places. And I don't spend too much time in describing the world. I do describe it, but just enough to put you there, not enough to kind of beat you over the head with it. I think my readers have enough imagination that if I just give them the outline, they can fill in the details and see it as they wish to.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, also helps to place them there.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than trying to make them conform to my very detailed description.
Mm-hmm.
You've all seen deserts, and I don't need to describe every detail of a desert to you. So, but what I can do is, and one thing I think is kind of fun to do is to take a creature that is known to the readers but not to the characters in the company
mm-hmm.
and describe it. And we know what it is. The characters don't know what it is. And, for example, the first time they see a dromedon, which is obviously a camelid type of mammal,
mm-hmm.
and we're all picturing a camel here. And the character's like, what kind of creature is that?
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, we know what it is.
Yeah, right.
You don't. So that's kind of fun. And again, because the characters have never been to the desert, and they don't have the Discovery Channel in this pre-industrialized non-electronic world in
right.
which they live.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very strange beast indeed. It reminds me of a moment in my earlier teaching days when I had a bunch of city kids out on a field trip, and I used to teach ornithology, which is study of birds. And one of them just ran up to me like crazy, going, oh, I saw the most gorgeous bird in the world. And she began to describe this bird, which was a blue jay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those of us who have been around and looked at birds very much think, yeah.
Yeah.
And we've almost forgotten how beautiful they
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
And so it's a similar thing in the case of the characters seeing their first dromedon. Wow, what an odd creature.
Mm-hmm.
We've been looking at pictures of camels since we were very little, so it seemed out of the ordinary to us.
Yeah, interesting. So we as readers, take our own experiences to a novel like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that. So this is going to be a little tricky because I want you to get listeners caught up with what happened in Elf Hunter to kind of set up what's happening in Fireheart, but I know we can't give away too much information here.
Well,
so how can you do that?
I can certainly, let's just talk about where we are at the beginning of Fireheart.
Okay.
Okay, the company which consists of various characters of various races, and they're the familiar high fantasy types of races, elves, dwarves, and men, etc.
Mm-hmm.
The company finds itself back in the Greatwood Realm, which is a large eastern forest in which the wood elves hold sway. And basically we have an awesome villain who pervades the entire series, and frankly he's, in my opinion, the most important character in it. He has been, let's just say, had his ears pinned back severely at the end of Elf Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't say any more about that.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
But let's just go on and say that this book really centers on the character of Oregon, who is a young man, a very likable young man, and his brother Haligond, who is an older kind of version of Oregon, but who has suffered some sort of fall from grace. He has lost his honor and has disappeared. Oregon has only recently found out that he has a brother. He finds this out in Elf Hunter. Oregon knows very little about who he is or who his family is, and he desperately wishes to learn, as anyone could relate to.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know who you are and where you came from. So Oregon still doesn't know much about himself, but he knows he has a brother, and he becomes aware in the early chapters of Fireheart that Haligond cannot be found. Well, there's a bunch of mischief in dwarf realms that goes on in the beginning of Fireheart, because I like the dwarves. They're one of my favorites to work with, and I've been told I do dwarf well. Now, the fact that I'm 5'2" probably doesn't have anything to do with that. But I enjoy them. And so there's a lot of this sort of mischief that goes on in the first few chapters of Fireheart, in which Oregond is trying to find out where Haligond has gone, because Haligond was friendly with dwarves as well, and perhaps we can learn some things, be enlightened. Well, through various methods, we find out that Haligond has, in fact, run off to the Great Southern Desert, which is a vast and largely unknown and unexplored area by the people of the North. I mean, they haven't really explored the Southern Desert much and don't know that much about it. So Oregond then sets off to find Haligond, because to people like Oregond, the loss of honor would be a fate worse than death. He's a very honorable man, and he believes that it might be his duty or his destiny to help his brother come back to the light and regain what was lost.
Mm-hmm.
So off they go into the great Southland. And because they don't know where they're going, and because they don't know where Haligond is, that's one of the reasons Fireheart is as long as it is.
Oh, okay.
It would be quite unusual for them to go down and 3 days later, there he is over there.
Well, they have to meander around a while.
Yeah, well, they do a little bit, and some interesting things happen as a result, and I don't want to give away too much, but sometimes when things seem to be very dire indeed, they're exactly the things that we need to accomplish our goals.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
You never know where that dark path will lead. It may actually end up in the light, so the readers will have a few interesting twists in there for them, and in the meantime, there's a couple of really slimy villains, and one in particular that I read to my students in a reading group every week, and they were just, when is he going to die? When is he going to die? And I said, you want me to give you a writing assignment? And they said, sure. And I said, okay, you get to write your version of the death of this character.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, they had a blast. Boy, I'm telling you, I don't want to make any of them mad at me.
Yeah, right.
They came up with some very creative and unusual demises for nasty character.
That's funny. I like the way that you explore the whole idea of darkness and then into the light. And really, I think this whole trilogy, you are exploring that theme of darkness and light, are you not?
Yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that just in the way that is typical to fantasy novel, or are you going in a bit of a different angle here?
First I have to confess that I haven't read that much fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
My fantasy expertise is very limited indeed. But I don't think it's just fantasy. I think the theme of darkness and light, good versus evil, is pervasive in many genres of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that it is the underlying theme. And, of course, light in Alterra, we equate light with love. Love is the ultimate power, and all things enlightened stem from that. Darkness, of course, comes from hatred and self-interest and greed and all of those negative things that while they may temporarily further one's position, are antithetical to love.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a struggle between light and the darkness to see which will prevail. Will the ultimate power of love prevail? And that's a question that isn't answered until the ending of Ravenshade, which
mm-hmm.
is the third book in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I mean, it's only answered for the moment. I mean, this is an ongoing question that will never really be answered.
Good point. Well, now I know that in Elf Hunter you were exploring the themes of choice and free will. And so in Fireheart, you're going into, with Haligond, the whole theme of shame and redemption. And I'm wondering if that's the basic themes to this book, or if there are some other themes that you're going with as well.
Well, that is Haligond's theme.
Haligond's
theme, is basically it asks, can you forgive yourself? Because if you cannot forgive yourself, then you're lost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Haligond and I, there's no way you could not torture it out of me. I will not tell you how Haligond came into this position that he is in. But let's just say it would have bothered me a great deal, too, if what had happened to him happened to me. I would have been very ashamed of myself, and I would have had a hard time living with myself. And some of us can relate to that. We may have made a very bad choice at some point in our lives. And the point is, if you cannot realize that you are human and that there is forgiveness for you, but you must forgive yourself, too. Then you're lost, and you will wallow in shame, and that will drive you into the darkness. And so Haligond, now what's interesting about him is he thinks he's such a rogue. He's a screamingly good man, and we can all see it, but he denies it because he's not worthy of being good in his mind. And some of the other characters who shall remain nameless probably roll their eyes a lot. It's very obvious to some of them that Haligond is not sunk nearly as far into darkness as he believes he has, or as he would like us all to believe he is. He believes that if he is beyond redeeming, we'll all leave him alone and let him wallow around in this pit that he has made for himself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with C.S. Marks. She is the author of the Tales of Altera trilogy. We are talking today about the second book in the trilogy titled Fireheart. And you can find out more about Chris Marks through her website, elfhunter.net. Now, when you're writing these books, because I know that this is young adult and adult fiction, so when you're writing these books, are you thinking of your readers as being young adults? So there are some of these very core messages that you're writing about are, I don't know, they're just very universal. And I would think that at a young age, 14, 15, 16, reading this, or even a little younger, I mean, it would have probably been great to hear these kinds of messages at that young of an age. You know what I mean?
I do, yeah. Well, parents love these books.
I imagine.
They do, because there are some out there whose themes are, let's say, a little less solid and lofty. And I think that when you can kind of tell a story about something rather than preaching about it, it may get through to some folks a little more easily and a little more effectively. The books are not preachy at all.
No.
Because if they were, I wouldn't like them.
Yeah.
But there is a definite philosophy that is expressed, and if one stays with it all the way through, one will basically get the whole C.S. Marks philosophy, whether they like it or not, unfortunately. But I don't necessarily view my readers as young adults or adults, but sometimes there are some things that are put in there that I know are going to appeal to one or the other. For example, there is a scene in Fireheart in which one of the characters, who is female, is she's a rather lissome, not terribly curvaceous sort of female, and she's bound up to look like a young male, because in the desert cultures, women are not allowed to do certain things.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that, of course, comes from some cultures of our acquaintance
mm-hmm.
that still exist. And this female needs to disguise herself, but she also needs to be in a position to do things that women aren't allowed to do. So she disguises herself as a youth, a male, and, of course, her face is largely covered and so forth. But she gets flirted with by three young maidens who think she's just the bee's knees. And I put that in there because I knew that the young folk, readers under 20, would just find it hilarious, and they have.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Little things like that. I mean, the adults might not so much, but young people would just think that was funny.
They really like it. So this story, it sounds to me, with its messages and the strong characters that are so relatable, you could actually, not that you would want to, but you could really dissect this whole story and put it into a modern setting,
sure.
I would imagine. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it weren't for the elves are the main fantasy element.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we have a few other things in Fireheart that would be tough to replace with modern. I'm just trying to think, and again, without giving too much away, I'll stop there. But just say, yeah, there are a few things that might be tricky, but sure, you could set this anywhere. You could set it in outer space. You could set it in Victorian England. You could set it in New York City in 2008,
mm-hmm.
if you really wanted to, because the story is these are very human mm-hmm. issues and problems and challenges that could be adapted to almost any fictional setting, I think.
Mm-hmm. Were there any surprises for you when you wrote this particular book, the second book, or were you very much in control? You know, did your characters take you in directions that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, they do that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me a wee bit of warning, but I did end up in places I did not expect.
Oh, really? Any to share?
Oh, I'm afraid to give too much
warning. Okay. Well, let's not do that. Well, then I want to bring up once again the horses. So, yes, tell us how important the horses are to Fireheart. I mean, you have a horse on your cover.
Mm-hmm. So. I do,
mm-hmm.
and he is a memorable character, very, very memorable character. The horses absolutely shine in this book. Again, write what you know. I've been around these beasties since I was very young, and I make my living teaching about them, and I have spent more time on the back of a horse than most people in this part of the world. And honestly, we don't have companion animals like dogs or things like this in Altera much. I mean, they probably exist, but our company doesn't have dogs or cats or hamsters or guinea pigs, but the horses are companions, as well as absolute necessities for survival.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole culture of people in the Eastern Stone Desert. They're called the Kaji. They value their horses above everything else. The horses drink before the people do.
Wow.
But because the horses work harder.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Galen, who is the character whose viewpoint I normally project, is very impressed with them. There's another, remember the slimy villain who nobody likes, calls them savages. Galen thinks they're very enlightened because they understand how hard their horses work and how
mm-hmm.
much they depend on them.
Mm-hmm.
The horses in Fireheart, there's one in particular who is just a fabulous character, and he's on the cover. And he is also illustrated a couple of times inside the text. And if a reader loves horses, I say in all humility, okay, everyone has their strengths. Every writer has the things that they do best. This is one of the things that I do best.
Mm-hmm.
And horse lovers, whether they like fantasy or not, will really appreciate this trilogy.
Yeah.
Because it is difficult when you don't know anything about horses to portray them to the satisfaction of those of us who do.
Who do, that's true. Well, they are very unique animals, and a lot of people don't understand how how intuitive, how powerful, how sensitive. I mean, they are very unique animals.
Yeah, and absolutely guileless.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. Eros might not be guileless. He's a pretty interesting. he is. Several readers have indicated to me that he's their favorite character in the whole piece.
Mm.
He's one of the horses from Elf Hunter, and he persists. So
let's talk a little about the artwork. You know, you have the horse on the front, and Galen again. And this is your own artwork. I'm wondering how the artwork comes in on this process. Like, do you write and then do the artwork, or are you working on the artwork as you're writing your books? How do you decide which image to put on the front cover?
The covers usually aren't done until the book is nearly finished.
Okay.
Because I don't know what will be the most effective image to use. And I was going for – my covers have been evolving a little bit. I don't know if you've seen them all.
Mm-hmm.
But they're evolving a little bit from – they get more complicated as they go because the story does. And they become more traditionally fantasy art-oriented as they go. In the Elf Hunter cover almost looks like a 1940s pulp cover.
Yes.
And
you're right.
Mm-hmm. And Fireheart kind of does too, but it's a little more fantasy. And then here comes Ravenshade, which has the raven with the red glowing eye and the beautiful gray horse and Galen. Galen is the one constant on all three covers. But it's neat to look at the change in expression and change in overall demeanor of that character as she goes through this story. Because I'll tell you what, if the characters ever rise up out of character land and have their way with me, she's gonna give me an airful. I really put her through it. She is one who undergoes some very great trial, and you can see it in her face as the covers go through the story
as she progresses. Well, how long in our linear time does this whole trilogy take place?
Oh gosh, you know, I should be able to just fire that right back at you. I have to think about it for a second. It seems to me it's about 5 years.
Okay.
But
it's been a long five years for Galen.
Five action packed.
Yeah.
And of course there is the entanglement between Gorgon and Galen, which is central to the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that really is at the core of it. And one does not share spiritual space with a creature like Gorgon and not be affected by it.
Mm, good point. Now, I don't think Gorgon is as predominant a character in Fireheart.
Right. Well, again, our villains, when they get their ears pinned back that severely, they don't just get right back up again and jump right back in.
They got to regroup.
He definitely needs a little bit of skulking time.
Yeah.
And when he does appear, we do check in on him periodically, and there is always that bond between Gorgon and Galen, which keeps him in the story. And actually, Galen is very happy to go way, way, way to the south because, she asks Fema before they take off from the north, are there elves in the Southlands? And Fema, who is the lore master, does not believe so.
Mm.
And Galen is relieved. Well, good, let's go then. Because if Gorgon follows her, and in fact she calls him to follow her, because she wants him to be away from the Greatwood Realm and Mountain Home and Tel Sithin and all of those elven realms where he preys on her people. So she wants to lure him away from the north. And she calls him to herself with consequences in the end of Fireheart that I will not mention. But let's just say when Gorgon does reappear, we all know it.
In Ravenshade?
No, he reappears in Fireheart.
In Fireheart, okay.
Yes. The
okay.
ending of Fireheart, I will warn the readers, I'm sorry, I was evil, I confess, it's a cliffhanger.
Oh, boy.
So be ready to shell out a little more money on Amazon.com, because when you get to the ending of Fireheart, you're going to want to know what happens next.
In Ravenshade. And so when can we expect Ravenshade?
Oh, well, Raven Shade is actually already in print.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So, but we haven't gotten around to showcasing it yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's in print. It launched this year. It's been really well received by the readers, and it's my opus, actually.
Mm.
The third one has to be the capstone
yes.
of the story, and nothing worse than letting people down at the end, and I did not.
Did you leave any stone unturned in Raven Shade?
I'm working on book four, yeah.
You are. So this
I
is
am.
More than a trilogy.
Well, no, this is a trilogy. What we're going to do then is let the dust settle for about 20 years and pick up a new storyline.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it's a book four, but it's really a book one.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
However, one had best not attempt reading book four without reading the first three, because
mm-hmm.
you will be confused and won't know. But I'm not going to go back through and redevelop all of the characters that everyone already knows so well.
Yes, yes. Well, you must be just having a lot of fun getting on book four at this point.
Oh, I'm telling you what. Now, all you readers out there, don't take me literally. Even if I didn't sell very many books, I would have had such a good time just writing for me. But I didn't. I mean, I wrote for me, but I wrote for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because what good is a story that you keep to yourself?
Mm.
Well, it's a lot of fun for you, but I get most enjoyment out of thinking, oh, wait till they read this. They're going to love this. Oh, this is, you know, and it's like, well, it's all about sharing and entertaining. I mean, I'm about 99% ham. come on. Aren't we all?
Of course.
And it delights me to be able to do my own covers and be able to do my own illustrations. But I will not illustrate Gorgon, by the way, because I don't want to interfere with anybody's impression of what he looks like.
Oh, good idea.
And so his eyes I have done, and I have portraits of him at home. I have color portraits of Gorgon, but I don't let them out of my house.
Oh,
because,
that's kind of creepy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know what he looks like
mm-hmm.
in my head,
mm-hmm.
and if you read my books, you'll have an opinion of what he looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to interfere with what you believe he looks like. Whatever picture my words have painted is fine with me.
So we're not going to see a picture at any time come out.
No,
okay.
Not from me.
Mm-hmm.
Because once I draw him, that's what he is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I recently watched your book preview on YouTube for Elf Hunter, and I saw the eyes on there, your illustration. And it, they're powerful just like that. So, and I do have to say to listeners to go to YouTube and check out Chris's Elf Hunter video. It is fantastic, Chris.
Well, it gave me goosebumps the first time I saw it. I think Reader Views did a really, really fine job of producing it. Chris Hatcher, who was a joy to work with, just outdid himself, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that that is all your work, all of the illustrations, that's all your work, and the singing, that's all, that's you, and the music that is in that trailer, that's all you.
That's actually one of the songs from Fireheart that's done in there, and it's a small section of that song. It's a piece that's in Alteran Elvish.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the song is not in Elvish, but this is the part that is, and it sounds really nice in the trailer, I think.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's fantastic. It's
Thank
one
you.
Of the most powerful book trailers I've seen. So
that's high praise, because you've seen more than
I've two. Seen a few. I have seen a few, and I think this is right up there. So I just congratulate you for that. You guys did a great job on it.
Well, I'd say thank you to Chris Hatcher for his hard work too.
Mm.
And we actually have a friend who works for the Discovery Channel, and we emailed it to him. And within 10 minutes, he wrote back and said, "Where's my bucket of popcorn?"
Yeah, it's so, true.
When's the movie coming out?
Yeah.
The question on everybody's mind. So.
Oh gosh, would this really make a good movie?
One really would. Actually, I learned a new adverb the other day,
mm-hmm.
which was, I'm to think filmically.
Filmically.
Oh, man. You had the same reaction I did, which was like, excuse me?
I don't think
I've ever seen that word before, but I was told this actually by a friend who works in the entertainment field, and she said, you know, these would make great movies. She said, when you're working on book four, remember, think filmically. And actually, the first chapter of Ravenshade, which picks up from the end of Fireheart, there are some scenes in Fireheart that I wrote with films in mind. I mean, sometimes we do that. We think, wow, wouldn't that look great on the big screen? And of course it would.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we almost wrote it for the screen. The first chapter of Ravenshade, which I know this isn't the Ravenshade interview, but I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I wrote with the idea of, now this will challenge Industrial Light and Magic. Boy, howdy.
Oh, really?
Boy, wait till they get their hands on this one. Boy, the special effects are going to be awesome. I was really amusing myself mightily in the first chapter of the, which my friends call, let's see, what do they call it? Interdimensional Smackdown.
Oh, wow. Sounds like a big budget film right there.
Oh, I'm telling you. Well, you know, once the big studios get interested and all, I'm my tongue is firmly in my cheek.
Oh, Chris. Well, let's mention your website. It's elfhunter.net, and listeners can go purchase books through your website, or do you direct them to Amazon?
We direct them to Amazon.
Okay.
It's just Amazon has good deals.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they sometimes have some really good specials running. I think Elf Hunter right now is on sale, and there are copies of it for like $5. I can't match that.
No.
And my objective is not to sell books myself. I'd rather have other folks selling books, and I'm happy with my little royalties and just to pick up new readers.
Mm-hmm.
I just got back from Gen Con, which is a huge gaming convention in Indianapolis, and all the role-playing gamers come, and there are like 25,000 attendees.
Wow.
And, oh, my goodness, we did very well there and met a lot of our fans there, and they all know about the website. We have a blog, too, and a few other fun things.
Great. Well, you do have quite a following, so I want to have you back when you really do a splash for Ravenshade, and we'll talk more about it and see where you're at that point.
I don't think there's any doubt of it.
Good. Well, did you have any final thoughts you wanted to pass on to listeners today before we close?
Final thoughts. Well, just, you know, if you decide to come on the journey with me, I hope you enjoy it. Sorry about the cliffhanger and all, but be prepared to thoroughly explore this world, because the characters are going, again, this is the long journey phase of the story, and I don't think you'll be disappointed. So please do come on the journey with me, and go to my website. I love to hear from you. There's a contact us link, so you can email me directly. Please give me your feedback. I love to hear from readers, and don't be shy about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as always, Chris, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the program today.
Well, you're welcome, and as always, it's been a pleasure, Juanita, to speak with you.
Well, great. Well, you take care, and we will talk to you again soon.
Okay.
All right. Okay, listeners, that's been C.S. Marks. Once again, she has just released Fireheart, the second book in her Tales of Altera trilogy. You can find out more through her website, elfhunter.net. And as I mentioned earlier, do check out the YouTube book trailer on Elf Hunter. It is amazing. It really, they did such a fantastic job. So do check it out. Well, once again, I want to thank you for tuning in and listening to Inside Scoop Live today. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.